Hi, I'm Karen Stone, and I'm going to apologise up front if my voice fails. I've had no voice since last Saturday, so I don't normally sound this husky. I'd also like to thank Kevin for the title of my paper, One Search Box to Rule Them All, and that was without knowing that I was a Lord of the Rings fan, so that worked well. The focus of my presentation today is whether the introduction of the new discovery layer services has any impact on the way that cataloguers do their work. I'm going to look at the issue in the context of State Library's implementation of Primo, which we've branded OneSearch, so that is our discovery layer system. And it'll involve taking a very practical tour of at the operational level, as well as a view from the outside and a look into the future. I'm looking at this topic from the viewpoint of anyone who creates a descriptive record, so that means cataloguers and indexers. I'm not just doing this for cataloguers, because we are dealing with, at State Library, people who index original material as well. But the focus will be primarily on cataloguing and mark records. I got a little bit panicky when David was doing his talk because he started bringing up slides that mentioned terms that I go into in depth, but he just passed over them quickly, so that was perfect. Okay, just to ensure that we're all on the same page here, I thought I would actually begin by giving a definition of the discovery layer, what that actually means. And no matter how hard I searched, and in a past life I was a reference librarian, so I do know how to search, I couldn't find a definition anywhere, so I made up my own. So the discovery layer is a new style of presentation or visual layer of the OPAC. It provides access to all resource types, regardless of the origin of the data, and it's generally independent of and interoperable with the ILS. So a little bit like the extensible catalogue where the user interface can be separate, this one doesn't have to be tied to your particular ILS system. So if we have a look at the world in the pre-discovery layer, where we had a single search interface, which would look something like this. We have an OPAC, we have circulation, cataloguing and acquisitions hanging off that. What we find in the discovery layer world, and also at the same time in our pre-discovery layer world, we would also have had multiple search interfaces along with our ILS. These could be for remote databases, a local database, a digital object management system, etc. So we had our clients coming in, searching our material from a number of different places. In the discovery layer world, we combine all of these search interfaces into one, regardless of the source or the scope of the data that's involved. So we have our ILS, our digital object management system, our remote databases, and any other local databases all feeding into a single user interface. It gives the user, and dare I say the word, a Google-like search box, providing a single layer, a single point of discoverability for all of the library's resources. So a single portal for discoverability. So a discovery layer provides the ability to combine the catalogue search with a federated database search, providing clients the ability to carry out their search just once. It also provides, there's no need to move between the OPAC and the federated search interface, or between the OPAC and the digital repository interface. You can do your search in the one place. As well as combining a number of search interfaces, the discovery layer services provide additional functionality, and these include faceted searching, relevance ranking, and most commonly to Library 2.0 functions, so tagging, reviewing, etc. So these value-added functions are seen as key components of this new style of interface. So a discovery layer service will use data from a number of metadata schema and covering a wide range of resource types. So MARC records, DC metadata, XML, it can come from Access databases, it can be journal articles, it can be ebook contents, it can be websites. All pulled in together, all searched at the same time. So some of the current offerings, so what we're talking about when we're talking about discovery layer services, there's a myriad of vendors out there providing the new discovery layer services, and these are just a few of them. And you'll notice that Trove and WorldCat are also up there. They are also can be described as discovery layer services. Okay, so now that we can recognise what a discovery layer service looks like, and we see it in the world and we know what we're doing and we counter it. What does it mean for the cataloger or the indexer? Should it mean anything? Should reusing the metadata outside of the local OPAC have any effect on cataloging or indexing practices? And to answer these questions, I'm going to take you through State Library's experiences with our discovery layer service, Primo. I won't call it OneSearch. I will call it by its proprietary name, Primo, because it is to do with the software, not the end product that we put out there. Okay, so at State Library, we bring in information to Primo from a number of places. So we have from Voyager, our ILS system. We have MARC records for our published material. But we also have MARC records for index records, MARC information for index records, including our convict database, which is over 100,000 records. From DigiTool, a digital object management system, we bring in DC records for our Picture Queensland material. We bring in MARC records for our original materials, and we also bring in MARC for our digital stories. On top of that, we're also bringing in data from Medilib, which is our federated search engine. So a major difference between a traditional OPAC and a discovery layer service is that they don't tap directly into the cataloging module. Before Primo can use the data, it has to be harvested and then piped into Primo, where it runs through the normalization process, which was one of the terms that came up in David's presentation. So from the very beginning of our experience with Primo, the one thing that did affect us was the new vocabulary that we had to use. So I'm actually going to run through a few of the things so you actually understand what these terms mean. Harvesting and indexing, I'm going to let go. I'm pretty sure you all understand what we mean by harvesting and indexing information. But we did have to come to terms with things like pipes and normalization particularly. So what is normalization? Normalization is the process of transforming the metadata to provide a seamless search and display. What it does is it applies a set of rules to the harvested metadata for use in the discovery layer. And these are very complex rules. It facilitates efficient discovery and delivery. And there is no need for the display for a different display or a different way of searching depending on where the metadata comes from. So just because it started off as DC or it started off as MARC, the discovery layer doesn't need to know about that. It takes that data, it normalizes it, and you do a search, and from the end unit's point of view, they have no idea what was DC and what was MARC. Where this was doing, thank you. It's a little bit hard to hear. Is that better? Sorry. Okay, so Primo uses DC elements as a basis for the normalization process and the rules, which meant that we had to understand how the MARC data was mapped across to the Primo record. We needed to see what our data would look like at the other end of the normalization process, and we started off by looking at our South Bank MARC records. So this was published material. Some of the questions we faced were, did our records have the necessary requirements in them for Primo's normalization rules to work? Did we have the right data in the right fields? Were there going to be any requirements for changes, be they large or small, to the data that we already had? We wanted to make sure that whatever happened, that we were going to be able to maintain the integrity of the MARC records. And we also needed to look at the possibility of manipulating Primo's rules to suit our coding and data rather than having to change our data and coding to meet what Primo needed to do. So what we discovered was pleasing. What we found out is that two things stand out. Primo exploits MARC coding. It's actually fantastic the way that you can actually use the MARC coding. And we also found out that being pedantic in the past pays off in the future. So all of those of you who put your hands up have been told in the past, don't be too pedantic when you catalogue, you win. Okay. Our own catalogers have been very careful in completing MARC records fully in the past, which meant that our records had the depth of coding that was necessary for Primo to work. There are only a few areas where we needed to bend the rules ever so slightly, and even in these cases, we kept within what you could still call correct MARC coding. And the result might not necessarily meet some suggested guidelines on how you might catalogue something, but it doesn't mean they're not going to work if those records are taken somewhere else and used. So I'll go through a couple of the examples of what we looked at. So Discover Layer services share a number of common features. One of these is the allocation of a resource type. Resource types are used for a pre-search filter, a post-search facet, and they also drive the pretty little icons that come up next to the records in the results list. It was extremely important to get the resource types right because they are used in three ways. If we didn't get it right, then at any point, either at pre-search or post-search, something was going to get missed when a client chose the filter. So a resource type is determined on fixed field coding. So we're looking at leader positions 6 and 7, and we're looking at the 008 positions. We needed to see whether the rules matched our records and our needs. So we ran through some test data, and the test data was chosen to try and pull out as many different resource types as we could, so we saw how they came out at the other end. We were very happy to find that almost all of our records came out with the expected resource type. Being pedantic helps. We also discovered that some refinement was needed to some of the resource types. We had one very large resource type for online resources, whereas we had a large set of websites, particularly our Pandora records, and we also had database records. So what we did was we did a little bit of tweaking in the MARC coding and the normalization rules so that when they came out at the other end, websites were websites and could be searched using websites. Databases came out as databases and could be searched in that way so that there was no ambiguity when the clients looked at it. For those who actually would like to know, in the 008 position 21, we used J for databases, and for websites we used S. Still within correct MARC coding, but it gave us that extra resource type that we needed. It wasn't all plain sailing, however. And as we found out, if you take shortcuts in the past, they will come back to bite you. We had questions raised when we were going through our test phase as to why some videos that people were looking for, and they knew they were videos and they knew they were there, why they weren't coming up with an AV resource type, but they were just coming up as the default other resource type. Luckily, we have people who have been working there for quite some time, and they go, oh, I remember those. They were put through without proper fixed field coding because we were in a hurry and we needed to get them on. We found the same problem with a set of posters that weren't coming through as images. They were also coming through as other. Luckily, we were actually able to identify each set by doing a search on some other fields within the records, and we were able to pull those records out, fix the coding in a batch manner, and then load them back up again. Another major feature of Discovery Layer services are the facets. And within the facets, there is the subject headings. And LCSH is used extensively as facets. They can be used in full, or they can be broken down into their subdivisions, such as geographical, chronological, and form. So this is a display from our primo. The top one is subjects, just using the very first part of the subject. The bottom one is form and genre. This is MNCAT, so this is Minnesota. They use primo 3, which we're about to move through to. And you can see that they've pulled out the geographic subdivisions and used those as a facet, which we're looking at doing when we move to Primo 3. This one is McMaster University, who are using Endeca, and you can see where they've pulled through the chronological headings. And that list is actually much longer than that. I don't use Harry Potter. I've made my decision these days that I'm using a new search term. I use murder now. Comes up with some fascinating headings. So you can see how it can pull out everything that you want. So what we did discover was that to be able to get this to work properly, you need to have your subfield coding correct, and you need to have your subdivisions in the correct order. What it does is it will start off with the subject facet, and it will use the first part, the topical heading, and a little bit like the dates we saw before, once you pick that first one, it will then break it down and bring in the second subdivision, then it will break it down further and bring in the third. So if you've got second and third in the wrong order, they won't come together and it will end up separately on the list and people will miss out. Okay, as we worked with Primo, we realised obviously that correct subfield coding was essential. luckily for us, years of authority control work did pay off, and we could see the subject headings being used to their full potential. However, one area where we do still have some work to do is the changing of the form subdivision from the old X to the subfield Y. Form subdivision that I showed up earlier is driven by... Sorry. Haven't had my vodka yet today. This means at the moment that there are many titles that won't be showing up in our genre facet or a form facet because they're still coded incorrectly. And again, it's one of those things that at the time when it changed, everyone said, yes, we'll get around to fixing that, and we still haven't done it. Okay, languages is another facet that gets used. Again, it gets used as a pre-search and a post-search, and this is just a quick shot of what it looks like in our Primo system. So Primo uses a combination of the fixed field codings and the mark tags, so the 00835 and the 041, to drive the language facet. It takes the language codes and converts them into a legible heading, same as the extensible catalogue. It's extremely important to have the coding right, because if your code isn't right, and you say if you're in Voyager and for some reason when you did it you had your validation turned off and it let you put in a wrong code, which happens, then you're not going to get the correct mapping through to the language code. Luckily, we didn't have, at this point, we haven't found any major problems with this facet, so we're hoping that means that all of our language codes were correct. And used to work and do my job. Okay, lessons learned, errors and past sins. As I mentioned earlier, we've discovered that your past mistakes and decisions will come back to haunt you. These can be typos, coding errors, shortcuts in coding or description. As we've discovered, never before have these been so apparent. Couldn't see them in Voyager? Yeah, put them up in OneSearch and they're glaring right at you. I actually have two theories for this. The first is that the faceted display brings the headings and the coding into the light. Before, you wouldn't have really looked at a list of subject headings unless you went in and did a browse search. You wouldn't have seen a list of chronological headings. You wouldn't have seen a list of languages. Now they're in the face of the clients, so they stand out more. The second theory, which I haven't verified by any scientific method whatsoever, it's just my own theory, is we actually have a much cleaner cut-down display in our OneSearch. So things actually stand out more. There's not a lot of clutter, so the typos jump out at you, and it's a bit of a worry. Okay, whichever theory is correct, we've ourselves spotted a lot of errors than we ever did before, and if we can see them, then so can the clients. Okay, something that when I was preparing this paper last week, something came up on the AutoCAD listserv that actually helped to build my confidence that we weren't the only ones seeing this. This is from someone at Oakland University. They previewed 5 discovery tools, and they also started to notice the errors of their past sins in exactly the same way that we were. So it's not just Primo. They were looking at Encore, Summon, and WorldCat Local as well, and they also realised that things in the past were going to come back to get them. So in the past, we made decisions not to recode records when there was a change in coding practice, generally because we didn't have the time. What we found now is that these records give us unexpected results, or they actually prevent the data from appearing in a facet list. With microfilm, there was a change some time ago to stop coding as projected media and to code according to the original format. So this means that most microfilm will appear up as a book. Luckily for us, Primo doesn't have a resource type for microform, so it hasn't been a major problem for us, but if we ever went down that track, trying to figure out what to do with those is going to be a huge problem. And I've already mentioned before the form subdivisions that are still coded at X. So what else have we learned from the experience? Okay, it's essential for the cataloguers to know what the normalisations rules, how they work, not just your library app staff. The cataloguers need to know. It's important for you as a cataloguer to understand how a mistake in coding, while not crucial in the OPAC, can make all the difference in the discovery layer. You need to understand why a resource type comes out wrong. What's gone wrong with the coding? Is it something to do with the normalisation rule, or is it the combination of coding that you've used in the record? You need to know why the work you put into a record doesn't always get used in the display or doesn't always show up or work the way you expected. Primo doesn't pull in every single mark tag, nor does it like other systems, preceding, succeeding links, parent-child links. It just does not do them. So all the work that you put in to making them, and we know it in Voyager, it comes up nicely. We can actually have a link to the preceding and succeeding. We can have a link from the parent to the child to the parent. Once it comes into OneSearch, the link is no longer live, and all you get is a statement, which is no use to anyone. So we had to explain to the catalogers why we still needed to put that in there, but it doesn't work just yet. Catalogers, indexers, systems librarians all need to consider how they will meld and merge the metadata from various databases to meet the needs of their chosen discovery layer service. So we're looking at Voyager Mark, Digitool Mark, Digitool DC. We needed to work out, as we brought each one of those in, how they would match up with everyone else, because the display has to be the same for each one. You need to consider how you will map like with like across the schema and across the databases. So in Mark, we talk about an author. In DC, it's a creator. For published material, it's a 300 physical description. In DC, in the archiving world, it's extent. So which of the labels do you use? There's a little bit of bartering that went on between the Mark people, the DC people, and the original materials people as to how we would make it display and how we would all get it to come through. Because you need your search filters to work the same, you need your facets to work the same, and you need your display to work the same. Final consideration on when making decisions is when you, if you need to adjust practices, is where your metadata may travel to. Your metadata just doesn't go to your OPAC and it just doesn't go to your own discovery layer. For most of us, it will also go to Libraries Australia, from Libraries Australia to Trove, and then also on to WorldCat. Each of these uses the data in a different way. There isn't any point in making your coding work for your discovery layer if that coding screws it up when it gets to Trove, or screws it up when it gets to WorldCat, because they also will pull it together as a resource type. So you need to keep that in mind when you're making any decision about changing practices to meet your discovery layer's needs. Also bear in mind that your data can also be pulled into blogs, or web pages, or which is what we're experimenting with at the moment, is the Google Maps app. So we're actually pulling data out. We want it to be standard because we want it to run automatically all the time. So we want to make sure that what we're doing to meet these needs also meets the needs for wherever else we need to use that metadata. What each of these places will have in common is the need for standardisation for where the metadata is coded. Merging data from a large number of resources simply isn't possible if everyone uses their own variations of the rules. And this was in the back of our minds when we started working on the data for Primo. Whatever we did had to work in our own internal systems, so our OPAC and in Primo, but it also had to meet the requirements for Libraries Australia and Trove. We couldn't carry out mass changes to records that went against standard coding, as it would have meant major problems with display when it travelled away from us. And from most of us, same as, you know, you'd be the same as what we are, our data is shared with the rest of the world. So we need to keep that consideration in mind. So we go back to our original question and our brave new world. Does the introduction of a discovery layer have an effect on the way we catalogue? And the answer is yes and no. Yes, we need to understand the discovery layer service and we need to make it work for us. Yes, we need to ensure the provision of full and accurate coding and of description and authorities. So yes, as cataloguers, we need to catalogue properly, which I'm hoping means that that doesn't make any change to anyone's practices. Because, of course, you all do it properly. We need to understand how cataloguing decisions for one format can have an impact on how all the records are displayed. You can't look at bringing in your original material records just on their own. You need to see how they will meld in with the records from your published material, how they will meld in with the records from your digital resources. And no, it shouldn't dictate how we code our data, remembering always that our data does travel. So if your discovery layer service that they're looking at bringing in means that you have to make mass changes that affects the integrity of your MARC records, then you need them to go back and say, have another look. So let's have a look at quickly into the future, and particularly at exploiting data. We are getting some tags and reviews coming in, and what we are looking at is what we will do with these in the future. Will we look at these, the tags, the comments, the reviews, and actually bring them into the bibliographic data? Do we verify them? With certainly anything that comes through telling us we've made a mistake, we act on immediately. But do we start looking at bringing the tags in as somewhere as keywords? Because at the moment, when a record that's been tagged travels to Libraries Australia or to Trove, it doesn't take the tags or reviews or comments with it. They stay back here. So it's something that we haven't started doing yet, but we're thinking about looking at to do in the future. And, of course, it will take staff time. We want to do more with records at the collection level as well as at the opposite end of the spectrum, more with index records. We want to be using these more and we want to use these better. We're also looking at deepening our use of the MARC data that's already in our records or that we're actually adding retrospectively. This includes geotag data. We already have this on our Picture Queensland records and our digital stories, but we're looking at adding it to selected published materials so that we can pull it into the Google Maps API and set that up. We're also looking at pulling out more of the LCSH subdivisions. At the moment, we're not using the geographic or the chronological, and we want to start pulling those into the display as well. Bit scared though, not sure what's going to come to light when we actually start pulling in like the chronological or the geographical ones, so I'm pretty sure there's going to be some data cleanup involved there. And we're not the only ones who are looking at the depth of data involved, and the person who put this up on AutoCAD may actually be in the audience because it's from University of New South Wales. They've also implementing Primo, and they're also seeing that the complexity of MARC can be exploited to no end within Primo. If you can pull it out, you can use it. You can adjust it, you can fiddle with it, and you can use it. RDA. Will the introduction of RDA into the discovery layer add more complexity to the mix? At this stage, we don't know how Primo will manage the changes that will be required to accommodate the new data and the new relationships that come with RDA. I can see it using the three new tags, content, media and carrier. I can see them being used somewhere in the facets or pre-searches. But what does that mean for all the old records that don't have those in there? This is something that we just do not know how we're going to deal with. Relationships. Primo already at this point does a basic Ferberization of records, working on a very secret algorithm that doesn't always work the way it should. But how will we manage and improve? How will it manage an improved relationship display once we start bringing in WEMI records? And we just have no idea how that's going to work at this point. We don't know if we'll have to make wholesale changes to our old records. Just absolutely have no idea. So it's a bit scary for me. So at the moment, the original OPAC still remains because we still rely on it for circulation. And we recognise that offering two is a little bit confusing and it may not remain forever, but until we can get circulation independent of the OPAC, we still will be running an OPAC and a discovery layer. And so we are looking at making sure the records work in both as well as where they go. Thank you for your time this morning.